book fair that's taking place tomorrow, the 3rd through the 7th, before our emergency fundraising drive that'll take place next week. We'll talk more about that as the afternoon wears on and as the days unfold this week. Before we move on to the Positive Mind with Armand DeMille, just let me mention to you, visit the website, WBAI.org. In the upper right-hand corner of the homepage, there is an icon that says Donate Now. And if you click right there and donate right now, take this moment and donate right now, you will lessen the amount of time that we have to interrupt the programs that you love to do on-air fundraising. All right, it's 1 p.m. in New York City. You're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI, and WBAI.org. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we're going to talk about sex. Yep. Long time since we've talked about sex. Seems like there's so much stuff going on out there in our society that sex and discussions about sex almost seem secondary. But sex relates to relationships, and you have relationships between people. Usually sex is somewhere in the middle of it. Well, there's a couple of perceptions about sex in a latest issue of the Scientific American Mind, just came out. They did some research on men and why men buy sex. And it's something like about 40% of men buy sex in certain countries, in Spain that is. Buy sex means they have some kind of an enormous sexual drive that they take to someone who satisfies that enormous sexual drive for them, and it just seems to be more and more and more. Now, that becomes a very big question. People have said, why is this really going on? Why are men becoming more sexually focused? Is it true? Are men sexier today, if not, let's say, sexually focused today, more sexually focused today than they were 20 years ago? Were guys less horny then? Is it the result of internet? Is it the result of pornography? Is it the result of the availability of women? Is it the result of the birth control pill? What is this all about? Well, that's one question. And then comes the question about women. What's happened to women? Are women sexier? Do they want more sex? Do women desire more sex? Our guest today, Joan Sewell. Joan has written a book, I'd Rather Eat Chocolate, which talks about women and how they really feel about sex from Joan's perception. Joan, are you with us?
Hi.
Hey, welcome. Welcome to BAI.
Hello. You know what? I am going to look for that magazine because, you know what, I didn't spot it yet.
Just came out.
And I'm always looking for that stuff.
We are the first ones to get everything. And there it is. Scientific American Mind just came out.
Yeah, I was listening. I'm going, oh, this is fascinating. I can't wait to read the article.
But what about it, Joan? Tell us the truth.
Well, I think, you know what you were saying? I think you brought up it was just you know, brilliant. You know, are guys hornier than they were 20 years ago? Is this an expose, something happening? And what does that say about, you know, female libido, too? Because, you know, one feeds the other, supposedly. And it's a fascinating discussion. And I don't think that guys are getting more sexually focused. I think they've always been more sexually focused. I think social constraints have maybe hidden it more than at other times, but I think what you're seeing, especially with the rise of of at least the exposure of prostitution, et cetera, is we are seeing on all these shows and all these articles the differences between male and female sexuality, and there's a big difference.
And well, let's go back just one quick step. Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about years ago. Now, I remember interviewing men who would talk about their childhood when they grew up in the 40s and 50s and 60s, 40s and 50s mainly. There was a lot of sexual repression around then. Playboy magazine was just coming out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could get a look at, a peek at some part of a woman's body. But the average man said he masturbated 10 times a day. The average guy, when you talked about it back then, they said, oh, yeah, that's all I was ever doing. I was in the bathroom doing that. Now, that's back in the 40s, 50s,
exactly.
and 60s. Nowadays, if you ask young boys how often they masturbate, they say maybe once or twice a week. So it seems to be that when there was more repression, there was more expression through self-satisfaction. And nowadays, while more sexuality is available, there seems to be less of an impulse to do it. So it seems like what you're saying is true. The sexuality's always been there. It's just the ability to express it and the venues for expressing it that have changed.
Oh, yeah, that's so on point. That's so on point, you know. And there's so much out there. But it's always been there. And with men as well as women, there have been different attitudes to sexual behavior, and men have gone under. I mean, a lot of people don't want to acknowledge, but men have been under, like you mentioned, in the 40s and 50s and even previous, a lot of sexual constraints. But their libido has not been, let's say, affected by that. It hasn't resulted in them not wanting sex. So there is culturally a line. There is a line that goes along that men have a high sex drive, and despite the culture, whether it is sanctioned even by the priesthood or sanctioned by society, even pre-Playboy, the Boy Scouts even put out a book. I think you've heard about this, about masturbation, you'll go blind, et cetera, it stunts your growth. I mean, these things were not just folklore. They were actually printed. So there was a lot of boys that lived in fear about this. But yet, you know, the sexual appetite in men seem to overwhelm all these considerations. On the other hand, social influences and the varieties that come in through the years have a great deal of influence on women's sexuality. It's much more plastic.
In what way?
Well, I think that, and I'll bottom line it and then we'll work back from there, is that women's sexuality, in other words, we're talking about sex drive, that's what my book talks about, and is much more influenced by, I think, the various winds of culture, because we have a weaker sex drive. There's a lot more things that can influence it, where men, despite proscriptions against certain sexual interests, or variety, or what have you, remain strong no matter what.
Well, now there comes the big question, Joan, and we may as well jump to this first. You're saying that women don't have this sex drive that men think they do, and men, a lot of men like to believe, and not only men, I'm talking about men with women and women with women, but a lot of men want to believe that women are just as hot as they are. And they look for the woman who says, I want you so desperately. I've got to be with you tonight. I've got to see you. And they fantasize, or they believe, or women say, many women say, that they really do have that sex drive. Are they lying?
Are the women lying?
Yeah, the women lying.
Yes, and you know what?
Women are horny.
No, I'm not saying that women can't get horny. I am just saying, and I think it's common sense until we get into the politics of it. It's common sense. Women really are not as sexually driven or focused as men. It is so true, and it's across the board. It's in longitudinal studies.
Well, let's say that we don't compare them, because let's say men, because of the testosterone, have... let's say it's not a comparison, but are women motivated by sex?
No,
like
I
men
think
are?
They're motivated by other extrinsic factors. Now, like, okay, look, in here. Men, I think, are intrinsically motivated by sex. In other words, within them, they want the sex act. They're not thinking of certain conditions for it. They're not thinking of certain environmental matters for it. They're not thinking of all these other things. They want sex. It's pretty simple. Now, for women, there's a whole variety of things that have to play in before they want to have sex. And they use sex and have sex for more reasons besides the sex act itself.
So you believe that all men, well, no, I'm sure you don't mean all men, because I know many men who have great conditions. They will only go out with a woman if she's strong. They will only go out with a woman if she's subservient. They will only go out with a woman who has got blonde hair. They'll only go out with women of a certain shape. So I think men have many conditions as well.
Oh, you know what, though? I think most of those conditions, for real, are based on physical attributes. I really do. And for women, it's based on a lot more conditions across the board than just willingness and sexual attractiveness.
But, Joan, I think that men could either, if I were to draw a line between men, I would say almost every man I've ever seen can be separated into men who are attracted to strong women as opposed to men who are attracted to dependent women. So there's a line that is not physical. It's an emotional thing. A man says, I don't want a woman who is submissive. I want a woman who is strong. And I would say 90% of the men I meet have a preference for one or the other, and that's not on the physical type.
Well, I think that's to do with a relationship. I mean, I think there's been a couple studies done where guys were approached by at least moderately attractive women. In fact, there's two studies done. And for just sex. And they wanted to see how many would turn them down versus women. And overwhelmingly, most of the men said they wouldn't even know this woman. But she's moderately attractive. She's willing. For short term, now, as far as getting into a marriage or a long-term relationship, sure, I think your qualifiers are true. This does not make a judgment as to whether men who have one-time sex or, you know, like sex a lot, is inferior in any kind of ethical or moral way. It's just what I'm talking about is a biological fact.
And women, you say, do not have the kind of drive that men have. But women are told to make believe they have this. So they are told to dress in certain ways, because if they dress provocatively, then the man will respond, because what they want is the man, not just the sex that they're putting out.
Women, if we wanted just the sex, my God, how easy is that?
Women don't need breast enlargements to have sex.
Right.
But they do get breast augmentation so that they could attract more men who will want them and think of them as sexier.
Well, what you do is, the sexier you look, you don't have to be that sexy really for guys. And some guys will say, you know, women are trying way too hard. But the thing of it is the sexier you look and the more that your status comes up, the more men you have to choose from. I mean, I think that's what it is. You get more men who are willing to give more of their resources. And, you know, I think this it sounds very anthropological, and we don't like to think of ourselves in that way. But really, you know, when people get breast augmentation and they say it's for my self-confidence, I think it's a bunch of bull. You know, two sacks of saline are not going to give you self-confidence. It's not about that.
Well, it does give you self-confidence if you believe you're more desirable to more people.
And that is... And that is true. That is an argument that can be made. But it's not for yourself. It is for other people. It is a reflective confidence. As long as we admit that, I don't have a problem with it. When we say that this is something that I want to do for myself, I don't know what that means anymore.
My guest is Joan Sewell, S-E-W-E-L-L. The name of the book is I'd Rather Eat Chocolate. Fascinating, fascinating book, and I like Joan a lot. We're going to talk a little more about this. Joan, I want to go back to a little research we did here at the DeMille Center, originally with Roberta Azzi on human sexuality. And it's kind of a fascinating thing. I think you'd be interested in 70,000 years ago or so, when humans were walking around for the first time, the woman, as they were growing, as the human was growing, his brain was getting bigger and his head was getting bigger. And therefore, the underdeveloped woman, or the young adolescent woman's pelvis, was too small to give birth to a baby with a larger head. So what was happening was, this is long before there was any real communication. Women realized, they found many skeletons of dead women who died in childbirth with the baby inside, lodged inside their pelvis. What women learned to do was women learned to say to men in one form or another, I don't want to have sex now. It's no good for me. It will kill me. In order for the human race to survive, women had to learn to say no. Because if it were just up to men, they would have just had sex with adolescent women during their estrus, during the time that they were going through their estrus. They would have just had sex with them, and they would have killed off the human race, because all those heads would have gotten caught in that pelvis. So what happened eventually is what we learned is that the women learned that they have to turn the man off, but they can't turn him off completely. They have to hide their estrus. Because if they don't hide it, then the man is going to be jumping on their bones all the time. So they left the man guessing, is she ready or is she not? And this was the first human thought, holding a man back from... So this dynamic is set up of women saying, I've got the prize, and you don't know if I'm going to give it to you or not.
I think that's absolutely correct. However, I don't think, and this can come down from biology or evolution. I'm not sure. We really can't. We don't have a good process for analyzing that. However, I do think that it's not the case that women are gritting their teeth and taking cold showers in order to hold back. Whether you think that evolutionary means have that women are not as sexual as men to protect themselves physically in the scenario that you just gave, and so we don't have as much testosterone, we have a lower drive to protect ourselves physiologically. I mean, that is one theory, and there's a lot of theories to go with that. But the fact remains that women do have a lower sex drive, and that it is just not something that they're holding back on. I guess I want to make
that
point.
I know that point you're saying, but it doesn't make sense, because in all of nature, when a woman is in estrus, she has as high a sex drive as every male. When she is in every form of on this planet, every plant, every animal, every amoeba, when the female is in estrus, then she is just ready to get. She's out there hunting for the men just as much as the men are hunting for them. Is a period of time when a woman, when the female has that drive.
Well, you know what? Human females don't seem to go in and out of heat. They're receptive to sex pretty much all the time. However, that doesn't mean that they're eager for sex all the time. It just doesn't mean that they're aggressively going to stop it. So there is a difference there.
You don't think there's a period when a woman is much more wanting of sex than other times during the month, for example?
Yes, but you know what this is that's true. However, when you compare it, and I guess this is the focal point of my book, when you compare it to the sexual readiness of men, even at their lower point, it still doesn't compare.
Absolutely.
Women are on many magnitudes lower than that.
All right, so what does a woman do?
How do we get to the utopian society?
So how do we get there?
I mean. I know there's so many books out there that are trying to say, here is how we could do it.
And well, you went through this yourself, and it was quite a question for you. What I love about your book is you wrote it in the first person. You wrote about it as your own quest, your own relationship, the love you had for someone in particular, and how you worked it out, how you worked it through. Because how many women have to work this through with their man, you know, with their relationship? How many of them? And I'm talking primarily now heterosexual relationships, but we could extrapolate this to homosexual relationships as well. But how many women have the wherewithal to communicate at the level that you did and find a mate who is willing to work with them the way yours was, you know, and to try to find some kind of solution, which you both did when you found Jesus? No, I'm only kidding. Go ahead.
All of a sudden, Joan stood up and spilled her coffee.
But talk about it, Joan. I mean, how did it come up? What happened?
You know, you're exactly right, because, you know, women have been very self-critical based on a false understanding of what the actual norms are in marriage. You know, this is the problem, is there's been self-recrimination on women's part, and I guess what, I get emails from men too, and they're just as confused and upset. They're thinking that their wife is holding back on this tremendous sex drive. They're like, what is happening? Why are you doing this to me? And this is the disservice that I guess the point I want to make is more than the biological, that in our society, the politics of sex says the more libido you have, the better of a person that you are. And I'm a feminist, but God bless them. These feminists have taken that ball and freaking run with it. And the problem is that sex drive and libido is not equivalent to being emotionally mature. It doesn't measure how confident you are. It doesn't measure your success. It doesn't measure your confidence. It's, I think, a thing that we wanted to turn the tables. We wanted to become the predator as well as the prey. And I think it became symbolic. Sex became symbolic of that. And you have, you know, shows like Sex and the City, et cetera. It's confusing to men. It's horrifying for women. They feel ashamed of their sex drive, and men feel very resentful because they think this is not the way it should be. I'm looking at the TV shows. We're looking at the sex therapists. They're all saying if you just do this or that, you know, the women's sex drive is going to ping way up. And the problem is it doesn't. It doesn't sustain that. And I think there's a biological reason. If we come to that understanding, we take the personalities out of it. We take the politics out of it. And then you begin to negotiate from a place of true love is what I think. Because sex differences do hurt people. They really do. But if you want to be with someone, I remember I got so many emails, too, and people were like, well, why would kids stay with you if you're such a, you know, if you have this problem? I got some angry emails from men. I got some angry emails from the pro-sex feminists, thinking I'm anti-sex. But anyway, I'm just, and he was confused. He goes, you know, I love you. And that's the thing. The foundation is there's got to be a tremendous amount of love and understanding there. It's hard, but you got to take the personal out of it. And the fact is, science is so important, not pop psychology. Now, I didn't write a science book. I didn't write The Female Brain, which is brilliant. But we have to have an understanding of it. We have to look at these nerd guys and say, what are they saying? What are these people saying about sexual differences? It's biological. Can we still make a long-term relationship out of that? And what does it mean? That's the part that you start negotiating from, not from this is a part of personality, and I don't think it has to do with psychology.
Okay, but I'm a man who is saying to my mate, I don't know how to relate to you on any level of this emotional level that you talk about, so I don't know how to go there. I do know how to get to a physical level of expression. I don't know the verbal level as well as you know the verbal level. So I am now relating to you physically, and sex becomes the way that I manifest and appreciate your love. When you want to give me sex, it makes me feel loved. That's what the man says. When you are offering me this, I feel tender and loved, and I know you want to give me a substitute, like you want to tell me, you know, that you're going to give me chocolate or give me something else, but really this is my only way of doing it. And now herein comes this problem. The man is stuck with his primary way of feeling affection being the physical, and a woman having offered and promised and followed the script of, yes, and this is the way it is, I'll make you believe it's all about my drive. How does a woman let her husband or let her man know that it isn't the true? It's a sham.
Oh, that is so hard. I went through it.
What happened?
As you saw in my book, I mean, it was horrible. It can bring you to the brink. Absolutely. It was something that I didn't want to admit in myself, but I think, you know, I knew was true. It was horrible. I think it was horrible for Kip. I mean, what I went through, I wouldn't wish on anybody, but I know so many people who are going through it, too.
You went through or what he went through, you wouldn't wish on anybody?
Both of us. It was a terrible time. When you have a marriage that you really do want to keep together, but you know yourself that, like you said, some of this is just, you know, a sham. I can't live up to it. I can't. And where he's saying, this is not the person I married. Who is this? What is this? So how do you begin to negotiate from that point? I really wish I could have started fresh and said, this is who I am. But since so many of us are in this situation, it comes down to, not only for me was it coming down to being honest, because I'll tell you what, I faced the breakup of my marriage, but I also faced the breakup of who I was myself. I had to be true to me, because if I wasn't, it was going to poison the marriage. I may have kept it together, but it would have poisoned it. Okay, so I had to admit, no, I don't have the sex drive that you have. I don't have the sex drive anywhere near that you have. Okay, so where do we start? Where do we go from there? First of all, is being able to risk everything. And then the other part is what influences, what made me say what I did? How did that occur? What was I thinking? What, you know, it's a blatant honesty. But the thing of it is to undergird it. Now, for other people, they can judge me. People have judged me. Said, you know, you should have been damn honest from the beginning. Well, yeah, I should have been. You bet your, you know. But the thing of it is like women who've grown up to be, you know, feminist. I wanted to believe that if I love someone, my sexuality would go up, my sex drive would go up. I could do this. I could carry this through. And that's not true. It wasn't sustainable. Well, so I had to look at the science. I had to look at myself. And that's really what helped us, is because Kip looked at it too. And the thing of it was, is he saw that I wasn't just being withholding. You know, I wasn't punishing. And what did having unwanted sex mean to me, too? Not just him being deprived, but what did unwanted sex mean to me, and how would it affect our relationship?
Well, you know, if you think about it, though, for many women, I think, they at one time felt one way, and then later they feel another way. Men and women are, you know, we are chemical beings. And a man is going to feel very different when he's 60 than he did when he was 20. And so at 20, he may have had much more focus on the physical act, and then at 60, he cares much more about the emotional connection.
I don't know. I've watched Hugh Hefner. It's not happening with him.
Well, I don't think you could use Hefner, because I don't think Hefner is a sexual being. You know, he never presents himself as a sexual being. He presents himself as a benign kind of papa. He doesn't put himself out there as a sexual being. So, I mean, he's more, if you look at him and you thought about hormones, you'd think oxytocin much more than testosterone, because you could just see he's bonding all the time, he's holding all the time, he's always being affectionate. And it's like, even though we have this image, oh, he's out there being rampant and having all these ladies and having sex all the time, But, you know, we have to take a short break. And when we come back, I want to talk about the fact that both men and women have to make more peace with the fact that they change, not that they've always been a certain way. Because when you think about it, when you think backwards, if you took a photograph of somebody from 5 years ago when they were hot and ready and dancing like crazy and wanted sex and said, here's this picture of you, where are you now? The answer is I've changed, not the answer is I was a liar back then. Maybe, but that's a real question. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I have to play you some cheer-up music because the economy needs some cheer-up music. I'm going to play you something that I think is just makes you feel good. And then after that, we'll continue with Joan Sewell in the book, I'd Rather Eat Chocolate. I'll be right back.
Greetings, this is Savion Glover, and you're listening to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York. Enjoy.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
You might slip, you know you might slide, stumble and fall by the roadside, but don't you ever let nobody drag your spirit down.
Don't let nobody drag your spirit down.
You remember we're walking up to heaven, don't let nobody turn. Walk with the rich, walk with the poor, learn from everyone, that's what life is for. Don't let nobody drag your spirit down.
Don't let nobody drag your spirit down.
Remember we're walking up to heaven, don't let nobody turn. Preach the gospel, I believe it's true. I can't let nobody drag my spirit down.
Don't let nobody drag your spirit down.
Well, I'm walking up to heaven, won't let nobody turn me around. I can't let them turn me around. You might slip, child, you know you might slide. Stumble and fall by the roadside, but don't you ever let nobody drag your spirit down.
Don't let nobody drag your spirit down.
Remember we're walking up to heaven, don't let nobody turn you around.
don't let anybody drag your spirit down. Boy, that's a real perfect kind of song for both our subject and our society today and our economy. That's Eric Bibb, by the way, B-I-B-B, Eric Bibb. We're talking with Joan Sewell, S-E-W-E-L-L, I'd rather eat chocolate. Joan is talking about women's sexuality and what happens with women's sexuality. And so many men, I mean, if you think about this whole idea of menopause and midlife crisis and how they all go together and what happens, I mean, could midlife crisis be that there's a man who figures out that this whole illusion that he had about sexuality isn't true, and his midlife crisis is to go out and try to find somebody who can make believe better than his wife? You know, so he's got to go out and have an affair with somebody because she can pretend that she wants more than his wife may, and he needs to have that pretense. And could it be that when a woman goes through menopause, she actually not only changes her sexuality and feels less sexual drive, but actually remembers backwards that she never had it, even though it's not true? She may have had it in the first place. That's my question.
It's a really good question. And there is...
you speak a little louder, Joan.
I think it's a good question. There's no doubt that women... in particular, lose a lot more of their drive once it comes to menopause. But all the studies that have been done, still good studies, that at every point in a woman's life, from the time that she becomes sexually active, from teenagers on up, boys and men are still at least three times more focused on sex or varieties of sex or intensity of sex than women are. So I think at every point now, can the disparity get greater as we age? Yes, it can, because testosterone falls off in much more subtle ways over the years in men than it does in women. And really, testosterone, I think it's pretty irrefutable that is the source of the sex drive. So you are going to have that. And I think that there is probably more of a story going on with women and their sex drive over the years than there might be with men. However, there is always still a disparity. And so you're talking about things that are becoming more divergent, but have never really, I think, been truly in line for too long as far as compatibility is concerned. Now, they are working physiologically on doing testosterone patches. They're having some success with that, but not enough to actually put it on label, so to speak. So,
with what intention? To make women feel sexier?
Oh, well, yes, and for what end?
Why don't we just leave women alone and let them be who they are?
Are you playing devil's advocate?
No,
with
I'm
me?
Serious.
Okay, well, then I like you. because...
I mean, let's everybody be who they are, and if you don't like it, go find somebody else.
You know what? There's another side to it. Well, yeah, that's... Oh, boy. Yeah, well, again, I'd love to be in that place. But the point is there's a lot, not just the pro-sex feminists and not just the traditionalists who are trying to conserve marriage and buttress it against any wind that might come around, that women need to have more sex with their men to maintain a stable household. And nobody wants to see the nuclear family fall apart any more than it is. I, myself, am neutral about it. I mean, I think that we need to do what we have to do for ourselves. If you have a partner and he's willing to make, you know, and it is a sacrifice, some sacrifices and certain kinds of negotiations, not the usual kinds I see, but what I had to go through in my book, that's fine. But the thing of it is we have to look at the social aspect, is that nobody's giving a pill for men to reduce their sex drive. Nobody's doing that. Nobody's saying, you men, are the ones who want too much sex. We got to preserve marriage. I think we're going to give you this pill. It's going to reduce your sex drive. Women are still in, unfortunately, that state where they need to bring up theirs to meet men, and men don't have to bring down theirs to meet women.
Well, actually, I mean, you know, the marriage contract is a pill that is meant to reduce men's sex drive. It says to men, you should not turn this anywhere else. Keep it in your pocket and don't go anywhere except with your wife. So it's automatically, it takes you out of the random possibility into the single focus possibility. So even though it's not a pill, it's an agreement, and men make this agreement. Many men think that they could keep the agreement, and many men can't.
Oh, yeah, many men cannot keep the agreement. I mean, it's true. Now, there's women who can't keep the agreement, but for the most part, it's kind of for different reasons. But for men, it's sexual variety. I mean, for women, it can be that their marriage is already going bad, and that's usually why they go outside of it, not for extra sex.
Well, so now your guy, Kip, mm-hmm. you and he were working, and I remember you talked about the lady who moved in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one who is this relatively not dynamically attractive woman who moved into the building where you were living, and how Kip's eye was suddenly turned.
Oh, yeah.
All right? Now, what do you think? If you're a woman who feels less sexual drive than your partner, what about your partner going outside the marriage? How do you feel about it? How about saying, do you think it's okay? Do you say to him, look, if you got to go, go. Please don't bring back disease or somebody else's children.
You know what? Yeah, I mean, I read lots of books, too, after I started all this on open marriage. And open marriage doesn't seem to be any more successful than your usual closed marriage. I'm not defending the institution of marriage, per se.
But what do you say, Joan? What do you say? What do you say to Kip?
Oh, as far as that's concerned, all the theories and all the books that I looked at, you know, and we talked about, and I talked about with other people, including, you know, I talked actually to, I have some gay guy friends whose relationships are open and some who are closed. And the interesting thing about gay guy friends is they don't have the constraints on each other that a man-woman relationship has, as far as they're both highly sexual. And they have the open relationships haven't worked for them, those that I've talked to, that much either. There's sometimes it dilutes the relationship. It's very hard to maintain a core relationship. However, saying that, it seems to be hard to maintain a relationship no matter what. The thing of it is why gays are, I think, are lobbying for marriage, is you have that social structure already in place, and what it does, it seems to protect people from just the buffets of our own moods and whims. Now, that's a constraint we put on ourselves.
All right, so back to you, the personal. So what's your deal with Kip?
Well, we're not in an open marriage.
Say to him, don't you dare. Or you say you're not going to.
Okay, no, I don't say stuff like, don't you dare, okay? Because I just say, if you want to, you need to tell me and then be prepared for the consequence. Okay, for me, it's not an option. Now, if he wants to do that, then he's going to need to say that this is what I want to do and to be honest. And then it's not like you have a choice of secretly preserving your marriage. If you're going to have an open marriage, or if you want to do these things, you have to be honest with your partner. It's up to your partner to accept it or not. Now, for me, it just wouldn't work.
Why not?
You know, because, and I think I asked Kip about this, too. I said, what if I went outside for companionship or what have you? Because it's usually put on the woman of what would she
right,
do.
Absolutely.
But guys actually get very jealous themselves. And I said, you know, how would you feel? And he said, I would get very jealous. And I said, well, that's what you have to look at, because what's good for the goose is good for the gander type of thing. And
okay, so I have a guy. I understand, Joan, and I understand what you're saying, but I just don't get I don't get it. If you, a woman who understands so much about men's sex drive and how they are driven by both testosterone and all the other cultural things that drive men, and you are saying you are unsheathing, you are unmasking this feminine mystique of being a hot, sexy lady, and that women really don't have the kind of drive that men do, and men are more horny than women. In all of Spain, 40% of the men have sex outside the marriage with hired prostitutes and go home and their marriages stay together. Why would a woman who is feeling that way not condone it? I don't understand it, because if you're saying, I understand you have this this drive. Now, I'm not saying I condone it, because I think that it's pretty primitive to do it the other way, but still, why wouldn't a woman just say, look, it's just a sex drive. I'm not going to object to you masturbating. I'm not going to object to you, you know, why would I object to you doing this other thing? So I don't understand that difference.
Well, because it does, for me, it does bring a lot of other factors into the picture. You know, like you said, there's disease. There's also emotional aspect of it. You know, men that have sex outside of the marriage may have one-night stands where they may get emotionally involved. And if this is under the covers, then what you have is a lot of surprised women who said, oh, I had no idea he had a relationship, and now he's leaving for this relationship. Men do fall in love sometimes through sex, too.
Well, then let's go to the gay guys you were talking about, mm-hmm. your gay guy friends.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there, gay guy friends have gay men have more sex available to them than any gender or any race has ever had. Not that homosexuality is a race, but it's just
yeah, I know what you're
saying. It's just so there. It's
yeah.
available everywhere. You go
yeah.
go on Manhunt.
Yeah.
You get online, and you could be hooked up by tonight. Much more than men and women. So,
which says something there, too. But, yeah, go ahead.
So men could get... They could have all the sex they want, and they could have primary relationship plus having all the sex they want, and they don't sneak the guys in the bed late at night and say, I'm really in love with this other guy.
Well, no. That does happen. I mean, the soap opera is not just for men and women. Gay guys go through the same thing. They go through not only jealousy, but they're also not always. When they go outside of their primary relationship, sometimes they do start relationships that impinge on that emotionally. They get involved. People get involved with other people. And that's one of the things, as one of my friends had said, he said it just diluted his relationship with his primary, he refers to him as his husband, okay? And what happened is the relationship fell apart. Now, I'm not saying that happens every time. Some people do keep them separate, or their relationship with their primary is so strong. It's hard to make a prescription saying, this is how marriage should be. This is how your relationship should be. I mean, you're absolutely correct to point out these discrepancies. Should we hold other people then? Should we hold men to just one woman in a relationship if they understand biologically that men like to have relationships with other people? But the way we're set up with marriage, then when there's so much at stake and there's, and I'm not saying that that's right. Maybe we need to look at marriage. Maybe we need to look at all this and how much we put in one basket. But I'm saying that having open relationships is not necessarily the answer, because it doesn't necessarily preserve the primary relationship as we would think.
So how do you work with Kip to try to find something? Because I think one of the things about your book that I love, and the name of the book again is I'd Rather Eat Chocolate, is it shows two conscious people working on trying to find a way to love each other, you know, with problems that get in the middle. You know, and there are not many, very many books out there that show people working through a process. So how do you work it with him? Do you say to him, Kip, I may not be turned on, but I'm going to wear fancy clothing? What do you do?
Yeah, I'm straight. It's not to fake it. You can't fake it, because once you're true to yourself, I think particularly for women, what men don't understand about women is, like, it's not a big deal. Why can't you just have sex, even if you're not totally into it? the thing about a lot of self-help books is they tell women how to think of sex when they don't want to have sex. Think of it as a gift. Think of it as a loving this. Think of it as that. And pretty soon you're going to want it at least for those extrinsic reasons. I'm saying that when you're having sex and you don't want to, if you really don't want to, it's going to poison the relationship. You have to put things into steps of what you are not just going to do for the sake of the other person and martyr yourself on sex, but what it is that you can do that you still feel like you have your integrity and you don't feel like your personal body, because this is not an object that you can just negotiate. Your body is different from any other object. You know, you have to feel okay. And the thing about my book, and it's not going to work for everybody. You know, it certainly isn't. People may say, well, no, I don't even like those steps. But I'm saying this is what works for me. These are the levels. I guess it's better to call them levels of sexual involvement that I may want to, you know, that I am willing to participate in without it, okay, feeling like a violation. You can't
so
feel like
there are things that you need from Kip to say to him, I may not have the kind of drive that you do, Kip, but if you're going to try to, you know, you may want to jump right into the kitchen. I need to warm up the oven. I need to get myself stimulated. I need certain things that would bring me around to, if given some time, would bring me around to being more open to you. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Good.
No, because I think that, you know, the whole thing about foreplay and that women need long foreplay, although I've gotten letters from women who say, you know what, I'm not interested in the foreplay. If I'm not interested in sex, I'm not even interested in the foreplay. Or I wish you would just get it over and done with. Now, what I'm saying is if you're having those nights where you're not interested in sex and you really are not interested in foreplay, okay, what is it that you do then? Instead of getting yourself into a psychological state where you hope that you're going to be, you know, feel the sexual urge, that may not happen. So what do you do then?
Or hope that he's going to get away because you've made yourself so unattractive and or unavailable that he eventually gets tired of waiting for you.
Oh, dear, that's easy to do if you want to.
Sure.
Yes. So what is there?
What's the alternative?
Yeah, what is your alternative to trying to, like, give yourself, you know, instead of these books that are saying you need to work on your psychology, which is what they're really saying when they want women to bring up a sex drive.
Because there's something wrong with you, woman, for not having the same sex drive that your husband thinks you should have.
Right, and that you need to be then either connived or manipulated or, you know, said poems or roses or bathwater into it. And that's not always the case. It's just that we don't have the same appetite for it. So that's where I'm coming from. If your guy wants to romance you and that's what you want more to help you get into a sexual mood and that works, do it, fine. There's lots of books on how to tell men to do that, how to school them on it. Guys are more than willing to learn. God, they want you to be more sexual. They'll really do anything that you want. The point is what if you don't have that feeling of I want sex now, period? That's where I'm coming from, where the drive is not necessarily he's not doing this for me or he's sexually unskilled, but that I just don't have the same drive that he does. And, you know, you just can't talk me into it.
So what's the punchline? What do you do?
You buy my book.
Hey, cutie. Now, what do you do?
What do you do is, well, it takes a little bit, I hate to even say the word education, but it takes a little bit of education. It takes not just, you know, looking at what I've done, but really looking and having an understanding that men and women have very different sex drives and what that means. What does it mean to feel deprived, a man to feel deprived from sex, and what does it mean to have sex when you don't want it? That's equally needed to be understood. And once both genders feel like they've been understood, okay, and they still want to make a go of that relationship because of the love they have for each other, the oxytocin takes over, then you're ready to say, okay, what can we do? I know it's not because you don't like me or don't love me, and I know it's not because, you know, you want to impose your will on me. That's the most important point to get to. You have natural differences, and this is the norm. Now where do we go?
Beautiful, Joan. My guest, Joan Sewell, S-E-W-E-L-L, the book I'd Rather Eat Chocolate. Joan, are you familiar with Daphne Rose Kingma and her work?
No.
Let me send you a connection for that. She writes The Many Faces of Love, a very beautiful thing that you would agree with wholeheartedly, and you'd love her approach as well. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We'll be back with you soon. I want to thank you very much for being with us, Joan. And we'll be continue. If you have any comments about today's program and you'd like to send some comments, we would consider all of them. Send it to armand@brainlink.com or armand@thepositivemind.com. We'll make it easier. armand@thepositivemind.com. Be back with you soon, friends.